Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Pep.
People have their opinion.
What other falsehoods are out there?
Well, a lot of the perception things about us.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Rebuilds are difficult. Sometimes it takes years and years. I still believe, given a really good offseason with this draft pick that we have coming and with our ability to get some veteran players in here alongside these young guys, we can make a substantial leap.
Kick back, relax. Locked On Bulls starts now.
My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. And these guys are men.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, streaming live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls _ Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. The place for all your texts, all your voicemails. Today's Wednesday, so we're doing mailbag. We've got a handful of voicemails to get into and a ton of text messages. So if you want to be a part of the conversation, hit us up at 331-979-1369. Our sponsors for today's episode include Hotels.com, Untuckit, and Grip 6 Belts. Matt, what's going on? Very, very excited for our mailbag this week. I feel like our mailbags get more and more intriguing as the weeks go on, and especially with the NBA draft coming up there, plus the finals, there's a lot of conversation to be had, even with the Bulls not playing. But how you doing?
What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Doing well. Nice to have a short week. I woke up today and I was like, oh shit, it's Wednesday already. Boom! Mailbag day. Favorite day of the week. Looking forward to the start of the finals. Game one tomorrow night, right? 8 o'clock Central. I don't know about you. I'm definitely rolling with the Warriors, though. I think it's safe to say Warriors in six. Would love this series to go seven games. Some think it'll be shorter than that, maybe a gentleman sweep. But I think the Raptors are good enough, especially on the defensive end, to give the Warriors a bit of a fight. And I'm picking the Warriors to win at home game six after winning a pivotal game five.
Yeah, I'm pretty much in the same boat with you. Even without Kevin Durant, even if he doesn't play till game three, this team is still so dominant. And the Raptors being in their first finals ever in franchise history, maybe that'll work for them. But I feel like it's going to work against them. They're going to be nervous. And to be honest, too, that Golden State Warriors team is so, so much better than this Raptors team.
They're a generational team. Like, people like to second guess them a lot. But, I mean, they're about to win their fourth title in 5 years. Not many teams do that in NBA history.
Yeah, that is very true. So, yeah, I'm probably picking the Warriors in five, give the Raptors one opportunity to win at least one game. But unfortunate for us, because that'll be, what, two finals that end in game fours or game fives of the last couple of years. So I wanted to get back to game sixes and game sevens like we were seeing, like you said, but I don't really anticipate that happening unless Kawhi Leonard all of a sudden just absolutely takes over for the Raptors. But even in that case, when we're talking about Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, Andre Iguodala all having to be god-awful in this NBA Finals. So I'm going with Warriors in five.
That's fair. That's fair. I'm thinking maybe, you know, as you said, maybe Durant comes back in game three. I think that might be a way in which the Warriors kind of lose the balance that they've found in his absence, where Steph has gone back to being MVP kind of Steph. They're playing really solid team basketball, and they kind of, you know, they had to relearn how to play at their elite level before they had their cheat code named Kevin Durant. If KD comes back at some point, either game three or four in Oakland, I think that might actually allow the Raptors to steal a game in Oakland because the Warriors get a little disjointed. So I think, especially if KD comes back, which may seem a little odd, but I think the Raptors and Warriors will split the first two in Toronto. And then I think they're going to split the second two in Oakland. And I think the Raptors have a greater chance of getting a win in Oakland in either game three or four if KD comes back and kind of things go haywire for the Warriors as they try and readjust to having him on
the
floor.
Yeah, I think it's kind of crazy that we think about this Warriors team. I feel like they're just going to run them off the gym. You know, this Raptors team, I feel like, was able to get by just because the Bucks. I know the Bucks do like to get out in transition, and they did a really good job throughout that series to kind of stop the Bucks from doing that and clog up the lane and avoid Giannis from being able to kick out or even score at the bucket. I just feel like the Raptors are going to get run off the floor by this Warriors team. And, you know, having big guys in your lineup like Serge Ibaka and Marc Gasol, I mean, Pascal Siakam, I think, will be able to hold his own, but I just think about their big men in their front court. I feel like that Warriors team is just going to run all over them. So,
yeah.
But nonetheless, I'm very excited for this NBA Finals.
Yeah, still hoping for at least a close game or two or three and some entertaining ones. But yeah, I mean, I'm with you. When you think about it, like the Clippers and the Rockets managed to push the Warriors to six, and I think part of that was just the Warriors playing lousy. And then when they got to the Conference Finals and played Portland, I want to say, had like a 15-plus margin lead in three of those four games and got swept. So, you know, nothing against the Blazers. They had a heck of a run through the playoffs as well. But when you think about that, when you think about the West versus East disparity that has existed in recent years, it's hard to see the Raptors giving the Warriors much of a fight. But again, their defensive strength, the Raptors, I think, is what might give them a chance to at least make this somewhat of a series.
Definitely agree with that. So, looking forward to this NBA Finals. And then after that, we got a long summer without NBA basketball, but still have a lot to talk about with the draft and the combine ending, the draft coming up, and then also free agency. And then we'll soon, you know, before we know it, we'll see Summer League coming around.
Summer League, baby.
Yes.
Summer League. That's when the Bulls can be hanging banners.
And so we get to see a million highlights of a guy that's played one game in Summer League, and everybody's going to tout him as the next rookie of the year. So can't wait for that in the middle of July. But let's get to our text and voicemail line. So, Matt, let's start with our text, and then we'll dive into some of our voicemails. Again, you can hit us up at 331-979-1369. First text comes from the 815. Says, love the podcast. Always looking forward to listening to the show. Thank you. The Bulls are looking for good point guards. How about Jeremy Lin? He can be a backup and even a serviceable starter. He can also be a cheap pick for the Bulls. Thanks, guys. Let me know what you guys think. Keep up the great work. Matt, we talked a little bit about Jeremy Lin, I think, throughout this season. You know, I talked about his connection with Trae Young, and I circle back to that because there are far and few between guys in this league that are willing to just kind of take that on, that mentor role, and whatever playing time they get, they get. I felt like Jeremy Lin this past year has kind of been in that similar situation. He went to Atlanta, signed there, was able to kind of mentor Trae Young in that role, and then obviously traded at the deadline to Toronto, and now he's in the finals. But I actually don't think that this would be a bad signing at all. That he could mentor a young point guard if the Bulls do end up drafting him there. But I don't think you're going to get a whole lot of production out of Jeremy Lin. It would be more for like a veteran mentorship type of deal where he's on the bench as like your reserve guard and more there just to mentor your young guards.
Yeah, I mean, I don't love the idea. Essentially, it just like it doesn't, you know, move me in a great way. I mean, and I think that's kind of the problem with a lot of these potential answers at point guard that we're looking for in the offseason. You mentioned his previous, you know, his year where he, you know, initially signed with the Hawks and then joined the Raptors. His deal for Atlanta last summer was 1 year deal worth $11.8 million. So you think a guy who's now 31 years of age coming into unrestricted free agency this summer, so kind of on the starting to get to the back end of his prime, maybe, you know, could get him for cheaper than that. Even if you were signing him on a 1 year deal or a 2 year deal annually, you could probably get Jeremy Lin for less than $11 million, which, you know, compared to other options, and we'll get to our text and voicemail line's favorite name recently, Malcolm Brogdon, in a second. We've got a new Brogdon hypothetical later. Brogdon would probably cost you near twice as much as that. So, you know, maybe as a backup veteran to come in and provide some punch and some leadership to a second unit if the Bulls do, in fact, move away from Chris Dunn the next season. I don't hate the Jeremy Lin idea, but it's of all the options, it's not one that gets me excited.
Yeah, and he's coming off probably his biggest payday he's going to have in the NBA when he signed that 3-year, $36 million deal with Brooklyn. And then in Brooklyn, things didn't work out for him in Brooklyn either. He only ended up playing 37 games in the two seasons he was there. So he was traded last summer to Atlanta. And so now last year he made $13.7 million after the 10% trade kicker. So obviously I don't think it's going to cost you nearly that much, probably half of what he got paid this year if you really do want to sign him. But I don't hate it. I don't hate it just because of the things that Trae Young had said about him and helping him along in his rookie year. And I think that's more important if the Bulls draft somebody at 7, draft a point guard, either Kobe White, Darius Garland, whoever it may be at 7. So I like the idea. I don't hate it, but I don't think he's going to have a huge impact if the Bulls do, in fact, sign him. So, yeah, that's where I'm at with Jeremy Lin.
Oh, here's one, Jordan. Some new names. This one comes from the 916. With rumors of the Nets wanting to pair Kyrie with D'Angelo Russell, what do you think about the Bulls going after Caris LeVert or Spencer Dinwiddie?
The one that got away. Yeah, the one that got away. And then, you know, the thing about Spencer Dinwiddie is if you do trade for him, I wonder if you're going to have buyer's remorse on him. You know, he's on that big deal coming back to Chicago for the second time. Felt like he fit pretty well with the Nets system, and I don't know if that's going to translate to the Bulls. Like, he's a good point guard, and he's going to probably be a backup, but do you see him being like the push-over-the-top type of starting point guard as opposed to maybe somebody else that's available in free agency?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of tricky to figure out just how valuable he is. And especially because of the way that Bulls fans wanted to just rake the front office over the coals for letting him go when you saw him make that big jump in Brooklyn. You know, happy for the guy and the journey he made and the fact that the Bulls were the team that gave him another chance in the G League or the D League or whatever it was called back then. And like, I think there's a lot of resentment towards the fact that the reasons that they gave him up and the reasons that they needed to clear a roster space and the names of the people that got that roster space over the, you know, over the coming months because of the space they opened up by getting rid of Dinwiddie, it made it even worse. But I mean, do I think that he's going to be like some highly valued player across the league because of this performance that he's had since joining Brooklyn? I mean, I'd say that might be a bit of an exaggeration. And you know, who knows? I don't even know if the Bulls are still interested. I mean, they let him go, and they might regret that decision looking at what he was able to accomplish, but I don't know if he's anywhere on their radar.
Yeah, I feel like the guy on the Nets that the Bulls would be more interested in, and like we talked about before, I don't think the Nets are going to give him up, but that's D'Angelo Russell. So I don't know. Like, listen to this. $10.6 million owed next year. $11.4 million owed 2020-21. And then 2021-22, he's owed $12.3 million, and that's a player option, which I'm sure Spencer Dinwiddie's going to go ahead and pick up. So you're looking at 3 years, $34.5 million for Spencer Dinwiddie. I mean, is that really the answer? Is that really the solution? I don't think so. And especially if you have to trade for him, then you're having to give up pieces in order to get Spencer Dinwiddie. So I like him. I think he's a good player and great, great character on Twitter too. But just to me, I don't know. You're going to have to give up something for him. And I'd rather see the Bulls take their chances in free agency as opposed to having to trade for a guy like Spencer Dinwiddie. If we're getting like a younger guy, then I could see a trade happening. But I don't know. I feel like you're just going to have to give up more than you actually want to in order to acquire Spencer Dinwiddie. So I'd rather see them attack free agency with that type of money if we're talking $11, $12 million a year.
And just to touch on Caris LeVert for a second, because that was the other name that our texter mentioned. First and foremost, it was amazing to see him make that comeback this season. But it was a pretty gruesome injury that he suffered back in, what was that? I want to say like November. Early November, it was like he dislocated his foot, and missed 40, I think around 40 games, and then came back. It was, I think, actually a game against the Bulls when he made his return. And like everybody just figured that would be a season-ending injury because of how gruesome it was. And the fact that he came back and ended up being a guy who was able to come back for the final stretch of the regular season and then play in the playoffs was amazing, especially because he was having such a good season and was kind of like a rising star. You know, star might be a bit much, but certainly a rising important player in the league. When he had that injury, it was such a bummer. And it was a really good story. It was a feel-good story among many in the league this year to see him come back from that injury. He is, just looking at his contract situation, under contract next year for $2.6 million, and then a qualifying offer next summer for $3.7 million. So we'll see. I mean, I think obviously not as highly valued for Brooklyn right now as D'Angelo Russell, who is that team's star. But based on the strides we saw Caris LeVert make, I'd say that Brooklyn probably wants to keep him around too.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the Nets too. I'm looking at their salary, and there's nobody even on here that the Bulls could take off their team and help them as far as cap relief goes. Like, you could take on Allen Crabbe, but I mean, Allen Crabbe is making $18.5 million.
That contract is ridiculous. That's a 2016 summer contract, right?
Yeah, that is. Yeah. Oh. So that's the only other one that I see that's, to me, that makes any sense. Like, everything else, a lot of these other guys are coming off the books or they're on rookie scale deals. So that would be the only thing I could see as far as a hypothetical, and you send back a couple other pieces. But even then, I don't think they're going to do that because Allen Crabbe's deal comes off the books after next season. So yeah, unfortunately, I don't see an avenue or scenario where the Bulls could trade for Caris LeVert. This is from the 724. So they asked us, hey guys, was listening to NBA radio on XM, and they were saying Coby White's stock was rising. It was just wondering if this is a good thing for us or a bad thing. I was kind of hoping for Coby White since we dropped back to 7. Just wanted to hear your thoughts. Thanks, and keep up the good work. Love the show. So, Matt, I responded to this text, actually, because I was curious about this, too, and I had this feeling. As soon as we picked on lottery night, we found out that we were getting 7th. The follow-up show that we did on the 15th, I immediately said I have this growing fear that if the Bulls are interested in a point guard, all three are going to be off the board before we pick at 7. And so that's what I kind of reminded our texter here, 724. I just said the likelihood of them trading that pick might turn from open to listening to deals to, yeah, we're going to actively look for a deal. And it's only a disappointment if you're really hoping for a point guard at 7. So it all comes down to who the Lakers draft at number 4. If they pass on Garland for Hunter or Culver, Cleveland will definitely take the next wing available. And the Suns will likely take Garland or White, depending on who's available there at 4. So that kind of leaves the Bulls in a scenario where they could be missing out on all these point guards and end up with somebody like Culver or DeAndre Hunter. So it's a disappointment if you're hoping for the Bulls to take a point guard at 7. To me, I don't think it's really that big of a disappointment. If all three point guards are off the board for me and you have to settle for either Culver or DeAndre Hunter, man, I'm cool with that. I think both of those players are still really good players.
Yeah, I mean, I would be okay with that too. I was kind of talking with Josh Freiman on Sports Feed about this last night as far as the most likely scenario for the picks being broken down the way they are off the board. Obviously, the top three of the top three, and then Garland to the Lakers. Cleveland takes one of the wings. Suns take Coby White, and the Bulls at 7 are out of options for the top three point guards. I think that's the most likely thing to happen based on everything we've heard. However, So in that sense, if you really are hoping that there's one of those two point guards for the Bulls to draft at 7, then as you said, Jordan, yeah, that would be a disappointment. I think there's one scenario or one factor that could throw a bit of a wrench into the system, which is, as much as Coby White's draft stock might be rising right now, there's a chance that Cam Reddish's draft stock is rising too. At an equal amount or perhaps even more, because it's weird that, you know, Cam Reddish came in as consensus number two or three pick before this college season started. And then because he played the third musketeer to Zion and Barrett all season, his draft stock fell a lot, significantly. People were leaving him outside their top 10 for certain stretches of mock drafts in the middle of the college season and as it was wrapping up. But you know, whatever it was, the combine activity, people saying, don't sleep on Cam Reddish, don't sleep on Cam Reddish. He has star potential. All of a sudden, it's like his draft stock dipped and is now starting to come back up. So there could be a chance that one of those teams at 4, 5, and 6 say, we, you know, the Cavs really need a wing and want a wing, so they take one of Culver, DeAndre Hunter, maybe they take Cam Reddish. And the Lakers and or Suns also say, yeah, well, like we need a point guard, but we're worried about Garland's injury, or, you know, we don't love Coby White that much. So one of those two teams takes Cam Reddish because they don't want to pass up on the star potential. That is the only scenario I see where Coby White is on the board at 7 for the Bulls.
I think the point is being made proven even more that the Suns are going to take whatever point guard's going to be there at 6 because the Suns have so many wings. They have so many wings.
I think so too.
And I know Kelly Oubre, who they just traded for this past season, is going to be a free agent, but I think they liked enough from him and from what they saw in a Suns uniform that they're going to probably try to keep him around. They still got DJ Warren. They still got Rashawn Holmes. Still got a few other guys, too, at that wing that it's like, what the hell are the Suns doing with all of these guys? Plus, so they got Mikal Bridges, too, on top of all the guys that I just listed. So I think the Suns, without a doubt, are just going to take a point guard and try to gamble and then see what they can do in free agency, too, or with a trade this summer to see if they can upgrade again, too. So it's weird that the Bulls and the Suns are kind of in the same scenario because the Bulls are trying to upgrade with a veteran. So are the Suns. But at the same time, they're trying to take a young point guard, too, to kind of secure their future.
And meanwhile, with the Lakers, especially if they're dangling Lonzo in potential trade talks, you know, if they want to use Lonzo as a piece for Anthony, trying to get Anthony Davis, even with the small sample size, I think, you know, the fact that he's a Clutch Sports client and the fact that the Lakers might not be enamored with Lonzo as the point guard of the future, that I would be surprised to see them pass on Garland because they like changed their mind and love Cam Reddish so much, which would be the other team outside of Phoenix that would have to change their mind on taking a point guard for there to be one for the Bulls.
Yeah, and I also saw people saying that the Lakers might be interested in Jarrett Culver, too, and that's who they ultimately take it for. So that could change things up, too, because then you got Darius Garland and you have Coby White on the board, which then right. It's a Suns decision.
And then you're talking about the Cavs taking another one of those wings, either DeAndre Hunter or maybe they take Reddish, and then the Suns take Garland or Coby White at 6, and then the Bulls will have one, whichever one the Suns don't take there at 7.
Yeah, the one thing you hope that doesn't happen is some other team from the back end of the lottery tries to trade up with Cleveland because Cleveland sees, oh, you know what, we can trade back and get one of those wings, whoever it is, DeAndre Hunter or Cam Reddish, back at 8, 9, or 10. That's what I hope that doesn't happen. So let's hope that scenario doesn't pop up where the Cavs say, you know what, we'll take an asset from somebody, we'll move back 5 picks and still get our guy there. So I hope that doesn't happen. But yeah, regardless, I think the Suns, unfortunately, are kind of our roadblock at this point for the third point guard on the board. But crazier things can happen. So I wouldn't be super disappointed, though, if it ended up with Cam Reddish or DeAndre Hunter or Jarrett Culver at 7. So
I think it's, you know, it's not the end of the world if it does. Obviously, none of this is as good or as exciting as, you know, adding Zion or Ja to this team this year. But I, you know, based on the fact that, yeah, this team needs a point guard, but I also, once Otto Porter and his contracts are up, this team is going to need another young wing to come in and fill that role, ideally in the starting 5. And, you know, it would be nice to have another option in case Chandler Hutchison is not that guy.
So agreed.
If it does end up being Jarrett Culver, DeAndre Hunter, Cam Reddish, you know, take your chances on maybe one of those guys being the wing of the future after Otto moves on.
Can never have too many wings, especially in this NBA. And I feel
unless,
like people don't...
Unless you're the Phoenix Suns.
Unless you're the Phoenix Suns. Oh, man. So thank you for the text. Appreciate it. We're going to get to some voicemails now, but before we do that, I want to remind all of our listeners, today's episodes are sponsored by Hotels.com. Don't hate like your friend's trip. Book your own with Hotels.com and get rewarded basically everywhere. Hotels.com, be there, do that, get rewarded. Our show is also brought to you by Untuck It. Our NBA and NFL channels are brought to you by Untuck It. Dads come in all kinds of shapes and sizes, and so should their shirts. Like tall, short, slim, and relaxed. Ever wonder why your father's button-ups look so long and baggy at the end of the day? It can be hard for guys to pull off a casual, untucked look that isn't sloppy. That's where Untuck It comes in. Untuck It is the solution that fits just right. Their shirts are specifically designed to look great, untucked, and feel comfortable at work or on the weekend. No tucking or tailoring required. Go to untuckit.com, promo code NBA to get 20% off. Thank you to Hotels.com and Untuck It for sponsoring our shows all week long. So let's hit our voicemail line. Again, 331-979-1369. Place to drop us a text or a voicemail. Let's get into these voicemails.
Hey guys, it's Dave from Denver here. I just wanted to ask you guys, which ownership would you prefer? The Jerry and Michael Reinsdorf combination, or what's going on right now with the Lakers and Jeannie Buss? Personally, I want the Reinsdorfs to sell the team, but with just seeing everything that's happened with the Lakers over the last few years, and especially over the last month with Magic Johnson and the firestorm that's come out of that, even though the Reinsdorfs are loyal to a fault, you know, I can appreciate at least their faults have had some stability, like in the front office with having Gar, Foreman, and John Paxson there, even though I'd want them gone. I think it at least gives the Bulls a chance of having a competitive team and eventually having some long-term success by the fact that they're not firing coaches every year, firing front office members every year, bringing in, you know, the equivalent of, I don't know, like Michael Jordan's agent, having him run the show as GM. So I think it could be a lot worse for Bulls fans, and I think the Lakers have just been a great reminder that things could be worse. So that's all, guys. Interested to hear your take on this and your thoughts. Appreciate it, guys, and I'll see you guys later.
Thanks for the call, Dave. Out in Denver, I'm excited. I'm going to Denver in a couple months, so it'll be the first time I'm out there, so I'm very excited. But, Matt,
Denver's a fun town, man.
I know. I'm very, very excited. Which ownership group would you rather have? The Reinsdorfs or the Buses?
No. I know that wasn't an option, and I get where Dave is coming from, and he makes a good point. It could be worse. I think right now what the Lakers are going through, all this chaos, the way that the coaching search and change and Magic stepping down and now Magic going on TV and saying there was backstabbing with him and Rob Pelinka and other people saying Magic was an absentee executive and he didn't want to work hard, and Magic kind of copping to that and also just saying that it was unfair to be said about him in the same breath. All this stuff is just so dysfunctional. So to me, it's not like, well, yeah, it could be worse. You know, yeah, we're stuck with the Reinsdorfs until they sell the team, never. But hey, at least we're not the Lakers and Jeannie Buss and this giant mess they have going on. Especially, did you see that ESPN column that came out like yesterday or the day before, Jordan?
Yeah, that said talking about a Lakers, people that worked inside the Lakers while Magic was there.
I mean, some really eye-opening stuff in that made me go, wow, like, talk about dysfunction. But it's not, like, to me, it's not like, would I rather have that or have this? Because to me, both organizations have the same problem right now. And it is big market teams with rich history, lots of banners in the rafters, and tons of money, and they operate like a little mom-and-pop team. And there is a lot of nepotism, and there's a lot of incompetence, and there is a lot of staying inside the box when you're figuring out who to hire from the very top executive suite all the way down to the players on your G League team. The Bulls and Lakers operate in so many ways in that same vein. And it's the problem that Bulls fans have with this ownership group, and it's the problem that I'm guessing Lakers fans have over there. right now, are the Lakers getting a little bit more attention for being incompetent and dysfunctional than we are? Yeah. Why? Well, that team has LeBron on it, first and foremost. They were expected to be good and were not, and then all this crazy shit happened. The Bulls are at early stages of a rebuild. So to answer Dave's question, to me, it's like, all right, well, would you rather have that rotten Red Delicious apple or that rotten green Granny Smith apple? They're both rotten apples. I don't want either rotten apple. What do you want? Do you want syphilis or do you want herpes? Neither, thank you.
That's how I feel, man. It's like neither is a good choice. It, like when you said no, that is a perfect reaction to this. You know, it's so weird, too, because there's a lot of comparisons you can make to both ownership groups. And even over just the last decade, like the Lakers have leaned on the whole Kobe thing, even since he's retired. That's all they've ever talked about. All they've ever gone back to is Kobe this, Kobe that, Kobe this, Kobe that. The Bulls have been in a similar situation with Derrick Rose. Oh, if Derrick Rose didn't get hurt, you know, if things would have worked out, if Derrick Rose would have stayed healthy, Derrick Rose this, Derrick Rose that. So I see a lot of comparisons there, and I'm not comparing Kobe and Derrick Rose. So calm down, everyone. I'm just comparing the idea of both of those being the faces of the organizations, and once they left, the Lakers were missing the playoffs, what, now 5 straight years in a row, and the Bulls have been in turmoil since. That team's kind of been picked apart. I think the worst thing of this all, and Matt, you had kind of alluded to it, was the ESPN column, which I think was sort of shocking and eye-opening for a lot of people who always just see Magic Johnson in this can never do any wrong, is not a bad guy 100% of the time, does all these really great things, and not to take away from anything that he does, but still, like, reading some of that and the hostile environment it was to work inside a Lakers organization sucks, and that probably sucked for a lot of people that worked there, but I think it kind of gives us an idea of what the hell was going on while Magic was running the show, and same thing with Rob Pelinka. So to add to this, I would say right now, man, this is a tough decision. I guess I don't even know if I have to pick. I can pick one. The Reinsdorfs or the Buses. I'll probably take the Reinsdorfs just because of, like Dave said, it could be a lot worse. And right now with what they have, it's a lot worse out in LA. But like you said, they've got LeBron. So it's hard to say I wouldn't want that because they have LeBron.
Well, you know, what's that saying? The enemy you know is better than the enemy you don't know.
It's true.
Bulls fans, if they see the Reinsdorfs as the enemy, and I think a good number of you out there do, at least it's an enemy you know. At least when Michael Reinsdorf, or on the very rarest of occasions, Jerry Reinsdorf, comes down from their, you know, comes down from the top of the Bulls executive suite's mountain to talk to us peasants, they never surprise us with anything they say. A lot of what has come out from inside this Lakers organization over the last few months has been surprising. And maybe less surprising to Lakers fans, but I think Lakers fans have been pretty surprised by some of the stuff they've heard about just how dysfunctional this all has been. With Bulls fans, it's like, oh, Michael Reinsdorf says something. Yeah, okay, cool. Like, yeah, we would love to see a change, and we don't like the nepotism, and we don't like the predictability of Doug Collins this and Fred Hoiberg that and Jim Boylan this and John Paxson's quote on this radio show and John Paxson justifying this move with this BS and Gar Foreman justifying this until they don't let Gar talk anymore. It has all become so predictable to us, which, again, the enemy you know is less dangerous than the enemy you don't know.
Even the weirdest things going on with the Lakers, like, you know, and I don't even know the full backstory because there's so much to read throughout this whole Lakers turmoil. But the whole thing I found very funny was Kurt Rambis and his wife, the Linda Rambis story, all of that. Lakers fans getting so upset because they think Linda Rambis was making player personnel decisions and like all of that.
Right, yeah.
Like add that to everything else that's going on with this Lakers team. Like, this seriously could be a movie the last 2 years that the Lakers have gone through with LeBron and hiring Kobe's agent to be their GM. Man. And this is a 30 for 30 or at least a remake of a movie in the making as we're seeing it right now.
Tell me when the 30 for 30 comes out and I will definitely watch it.
So I honestly don't know which one I would pick. I'll probably pick the Reinsdorfs though, just like you said, because it's predictable. We know what's going to happen. We know kind of the outcome that's coming from them, but the trade-off there isn't very good. So yeah, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
It's an interesting hypothetical. And it does offer some perspective.
Hi, what's up, guys? This is Dan from Colorado. And I had a discussion. I saw a discussion on ESPN earlier about if Steph Curry wins this NBA Finals, would you rank him ahead of Magic Johnson? That's a fun topic. I think you guys should talk about because I want to hear you guys' opinion because I think I will rate Stephen Curry over him based upon championships. I don't know where you are stats wise, but other than that, I think Stephen has. He's like a generational point guard at this point because he, after what he did this generation, and if he win this championship, that's going to make four. Oh, man. I don't know, but it's close. I don't know. It's definitely close, though.
So, if Steph Curry wins another finals, is he ranked ahead all time above Magic Johnson? So, kind of tailoring off our question. What do you think, Matt? Do you think Steph Curry ranks above Magic Johnson if he wins another NBA Finals?
No. I don't. Do I think if Steph Curry, who this season had his sixth All-Star season at age 30, plays another 6 to 7 years at a really high level and is, you know, flirting with being a 50-40-90 player, and, you know, continues his transcendent, I changed the NBA as one man kind of career, and the Warriors win another title or two, and he continues to rack up all NBA team honors and all-star appearances. Yeah, I think Steph Curry could end up higher than Magic Johnson on the NBA, discussion of who's on the mountain, whose faces are on the mountain, and who's are in the conversation. Because even if Curry and the Warriors win this finals, that'll make him a four-time champion, and Magic had five. Magic was a three-time MVP. Steph currently has two. Magic was 10-time All-NBA player. Steph currently has six, so he could certainly catch him there with just four more seasons. Magic led the league in steals twice. Steph has already done it once. Magic was a four-time assist champion as well as the two-time steal champion. So that's something that Curry will never do. Man, I went back and looked at Magic Johnson's basketball reference page. And, of course, you know Magic Johnson, the legend. But I re-remember that the dude averaged 11.2 assists over the entirety of his career. That is insane. That is freaking bonkers. That is Showtime Lakers Magic. Magic also won Finals MVP three times of those five times he won a chip. Steph has yet to do it, but especially if KD doesn't come back or doesn't come back at the start of the series, we could be talking about Steph winning his first Finals MVP in a couple of weeks. So I would say that, and also looking at their totals over their careers, you know, points, assists, all that kind of stuff, Steph won't be a higher than Magic in my rankings if he wins this finals and wins finals MVP. But when Steph is all done, I think he'll be above Magic.
You know, you missed those four seasons. We could be talking about Magic Johnson as, I mean, still people do, but we could legit, like, not even a question, be talking about Magic Johnson as a top 10, top 15 player of all time. And I still think people have that conversation, you know, but without those four seasons and coming back for that last one where he only played 32 games, still, I think that left a huge gap in his career, and everybody kind of wonders what would have been. But like you were talking about with Steph Curry, I think he's got to play at least, what, five more years at this elite or at least this high level to be even in the conversation of comparing the two. I get the championships. Seriously, I get it. Points scored, too. You look at that. Steph Curry has almost caught Magic Johnson in points scored in the NBA. I think they're about 1,000 and change off from each other. Like, yeah. That's pretty crazy to think about.
Magic has 17,707. Steph currently 16,350.
So that's not to take anything away from Stephen Curry either, because he has been absolutely incredible. I just want to see him continue this run. Because look, Magic Johnson, 12-time All-Star, 10-time All-NBA, 3-time MVP, 3-time Finals MVP. I mean, he's in the Hall of Fame too. We're talking about comparing a Hall of Famer to a future first ballot Hall of Famer, of course.
Oh,
but
Steph is hands down a future first ballot Hall of Famer,
without a doubt. But still, I think it's a little bit little bit too premature to talk about a conversation of Steph Curry ultimately passing Magic Johnson on the all-time list in terms of where you rank them right now immediately. Maybe have this conversation in 3 to 5 years and see kind of where we're at. Right.
And I mean, the point about Magic's early retirement is very important, because you're talking about Steph playing his age 30 season this year and Magic having to retire after his age 31 season, when he averaged 19.4 points, 12.5 assists, and 7 rebounds per game. Flirting with a triple-double in his age 31 season. And then, of course, the HIV after that forced him out of the league and into retirement. So if you take away the 95-96 season where he came back for, as you said, just 32 games, Magic Johnson in those 11 seasons was not an all-star in just one of them. He played 11 seasons, and he was a 10-time All-Star. Whereas it took Steph Curry, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. He wasn't an All-Star until his fifth season. Magic was an All-Star as a rookie, didn't make All-Star his second season when he only played 37 games, and then was an All-Star every year until he retired. That's impressive.
That is. That's damn impressive. I'm even just looking at their playoff numbers because I was curious about how both of those guys played in the playoffs and what their impact was. And Magic Johnson's actually, if you compare both of them, I think Magic Johnson had a better playoff career than Steph Curry has so far. You just look at points, you just look at shooting, you look at rebound assists, any number you really kind of want to project. Magic Johnson was better in terms of overall totals, but if you're talking about averages, Steph Curry has him handedly. But that's also too talking about the fact that the NBA is so different than it was back when Magic Johnson played. Like the three-pointer is significantly more right. important now than it was back then. So
yeah, just look at that. Steph Curry's playoffs per game 3-point attempts
10.4.
Magic Johnson 1.1.
That is ridiculous.
Which, you know, even in his era, Magic was never really known much to be a three-point shooter. He would take the occasional one. But yeah, I mean, that's a huge part of the reason why Steph career points per game average in the playoffs, 26.3, Magic 19.5. That and Magic being more of a pass-first player than Steph, which is why that Magic's playoffs assists per game doubles Steph Curry's, 12.3, 6.3. You look at some of the playoff stats as far as like advanced stats. Win shares, Magic 32.6. Currently, Steph Curry 16. So Magic's got him doubled up there. Value over replacement player, Magic Johnson 17.8. Steph Curry 9.2. And again, the totals, as you said, Magic's got him. But would be shocked if Steph Curry doesn't pass Magic in playoff points total standings. Magic 3,701. Steph currently 2,785. He probably won't pass Magic in total playoff assists. Magic had 2,346. Steph Curry 668. Might pass Magic in steals. 358 to 172. But so again, I think if Steph wins a couple more titles and stays on his trajectory of the way he's racking up career stats, you could make an argument for him ranking above Magic Johnson in Mount Rushmore in Mount Rushmore debates. But again, it won't be easy for Steph to get there. He's still got a lot left to accomplish.
Yeah, and I mean, I think we can even have this conversation if Steph wins, if they win the NBA Finals this year and Steph doesn't win another NBA Finals for the rest of his career and still continues to put up numbers the way he has. I still think you can still have this conversation and definitely be an interesting one. I'm just looking at a career advanced numbers too. The one thing that shocked me, and then we'll move on from this, was the usage percentage so far. Magic Johnson was only a 22.3 usage percentage. Like, that is a super low usage for a guy of Magic Johnson's talent and the numbers that he was putting up throughout his career. 22.3.
Right. Well, and then you remind yourself that, like, he played with
right.
Kareem, he played with James Worthy, he played with a lot of excellent role players where he was, you know, he was dishing the ball to a lot of people.
And Steph Curry's usage percentage right now for his career is at 27.9%. So that's way higher than Magic Johnson's is. So that just blows me away, and it's not a knock on Steph Curry or anything. It's just, holy crap, Magic Johnson was able to put up the numbers he did throughout his career and only being a career 22.3 usage percentage. That is absolutely wild to me. Great conversation, though. Great question, and I think an interesting one. So we'd like to hear from our listeners. 2331-979-1369, the place to hit us up. All right, let's get on to our next voicemail. This one comes from the 219.
Hey, guys. I had a question for you. I think that Malcolm Brogdon is clearly by and far the best point guard that we could obtain in the offseason. He's got a good size, defense, 40-50-90 club is pretty extraordinary, super efficient, can play the one or the two if Levine needs the ball. We could switch on literally everything if he was in the lineup. Anyway, in order to obtain him, I feel like we're going to have to overpay with how well Milwaukee's doing. It would be suicide to let people go, and I think they'd be much more willing to let Nico go than Brogdon. That being said, if the Bulls overpaid for Brogdon in order to secure his rights, we're not doing much with the money anyway. Do you think Brogdon would be willing to be overpaid for the first 2 years of the contract and then reducing our quantity there on out? So let's say we offered a four-year contract, we overpaid by $3 or $4 million, offering them a $20 or $21 million contract this year, a 19 or 20 next year, and then a much more reasonable $16-17 million for year 3 and 4, so that we'd still have a decent amount of cap space to at least get one max free agent in the 2021 offseason. Anyway, love to hear what you think. Love to hear what you think our chances are of getting Brogdon. Maybe we could have on the Bucks guy to see what their offseason plans are. Thanks again. Love the show.
All right, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. So, Matt, we've talked in length about Malcolm Brogdon, but this is a question that we haven't been asked before, and I find it very interesting. This we can apply to other guys, too, throughout free agency. Do you think it'd be more conducive for the Bulls to pay a guy, front load his contract, as opposed to evenly split it throughout, kind of like what they did with Zach LaVine? They evenly split his contract throughout the 4 years, but they've done this with other guys in the past. They did this with Felicio, actually. They paid him more money up front, and as the years went on, it reduced. Obviously not by that much, with him only making about $8 million annually, but still, they were able to do this with other guys' contracts. You think this entices the Bulls more or less to sign Brogdon, and would you like this path in terms of paying him more up front?
I like the idea if it is a necessary way to sign Brogdon and they can actually get him if they do this. Because I was saying on a previous episode, I think last week, that I think to me Brogdon is the best option right now, and he can do a lot of good things, just like our caller was just talking about the ways that he could help this team right now. And that's, if he would not be satisfied with a 2-year deal, which I think for the Bulls would be the best case scenario, because again, 2021, Otto's money comes off the books, Felicio's money comes off the books, and you have hopefully some rising stars on your team and a bunch of interesting names to pursue in free agency when hopefully the Bulls are looking closer to being a playoff contender. So to me, that's when I would want Brogdon's money to come off the books as well, so you could reevaluate and see where you are and have potentially two max spots. And our caller suggesting, well, even if you signed Brogdon to a multi-year, to a 3 or 4 year deal, and still have some of his money taken up cap in 2021, it would be less if you front load it, so that you could still have it certainly at least room for one max slot, and maybe enough for one, and then sort of like a second tier free agency signing on top of that. So if the Bulls' only way of getting Malcolm Brogdon away from Milwaukee and to Chicago is to give him a 3 or 4 year deal instead of a 2 year deal, then that is how they should approach it. Absolutely.
I agree with that. I think, just looking at the numbers too, in terms of what they would have to pay him, let's just say for instance that the Bulls say, we're going to offer you 4 years, $60 million. It's $15 million annually. The way it kind of breaks down, if you go 5% less in each year until you get to that fourth year, you're looking at something like $16, $17 million in the first, then $14, $15 million in the second year, $13, $14 million in the third year, and then somewhere around $12.5 million at the end of his contract. If you sign him to $55.6 million, it's $15, $14.25 million the second year, $13.5 million the third year, $12.8 million in the fourth year. So, I mean, you're saving a little bit of money, but you're not saving all that much. And unless the Bulls like really, really, really need that money, you're not, it's like a difference about $1 or $2 million. And at that point, I mean, if Brogdon wants to get paid $15 million, of course, the 4 years, I'm saying, all right, take the $15, we'll split it evenly. But if he's cool with it, taking more on the front load and at the beginning of his contract than at the back end, then I say, why not? Let's save the little bit of money and be able to use it somewhere else. But that's what you're kind of looking at. You're looking at about $1.5 to $2 million reduction every single year.
And, you know, if they want to front load and give Brogdon even a bigger offer than $15 million, and put it closer to 20, you know, the Bulls can do a couple of things to free up a little bit more of that cap space. I think it was my boy Bulldog from NBC Sports Chicago who did another recent cap projection yesterday and that he put up on Twitter, which includes the league approving of the Bulls' appeal to get off of Ashik's money because of his, season-ending injury slash illness, whatever, that would free up about $3 more million, and they could theoretically stretch Felicio's deal, which could get them closer to say, like, I want to say $27 million in total cap space. So if they need to front load Brogdon's contract, and they want to pay him in the first year of that contract somewhere close to $20 million. They could still theoretically have somewhere around $6 or $7 million more to sign, you know, a mid-tier kind of veteran to add some depth to the bench, maybe a front court guy, and you know, another small deal or two. Like they could theoretically do that, and if again, as I said, if that's what it takes to get him there, if they like we do believe that he's the best option to address this point guard situation, your backcourt situation, then I think they should do it.
I'll be honest with you, and maybe this is a conversation for a different day, but if the Bulls are going to stretch Felicio and you end up getting Ashik's money back too, and you end up with $27 million in cap space, then I want them to chase a guy that you can offer a max contract that has only been in the league 6 or less years. Because that's what it is. That's the max contract for a guy that's been 6 or less years in the league. You can offer that. So we're talking about guys like D'Angelo Russell, restricted free agent. That's the main one that I'm thinking off the top of my head, but still, like, that's who I want to chase.
Oh, I would absolutely chase D'Angelo Russell ahead of Malcolm Brogdon. I was just talking about realistic stuff. I mean, in the sense that it's not unrealistic to sign D'Angelo Russell if the Bulls have that kind of space, but just the fact that it seems like he very much is enamored with Brooklyn and Brooklyn is enamored with him, and I don't think that he's getting lured away from there.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So, but yeah, of course, if that were hypothetically true, the Bulls should try to at least get a meeting with him.
Let's get to our final voicemail.
Hey guys, great show. I agree with the idea of trading down in this year's draft, especially when you consider that drafting at 7 this year is far more of a gamble than previous years. You guys both talked about the possibility of taking a big swing on lesser-known players with the possibility of huge upsides this year, and wanted to float an idea by you to see how you'd respond. The perfect trade partner to me seems to be the Celtics for a few reasons. First, they have 3 picks in the first round this year at 14, 20, and 22. Going off some of the draft pick trade value charts you see online, for instance, Jacob Goldstein or Kevin Pelton, the value of our 7th pick and that of the Celtics' 14th and 22nd would be almost an exact match. There's a good chance that the Celtics are losing Kyrie, and the prospect of getting either Kobe White or Darius Garland might be appealing for a younger Celtics team. They could also then draft a project with their 20th. I just don't know what three mid to late round picks does for a team that's going to be a top four Eastern Conference team, even if they lose Kyrie. In this scenario, the Bulls could then take two chances. At 14, there might be a guy like Sekou or Nasir Little, or even Goga, who might be a stretch at 14, but I think would be a steal at 22, even though I don't think he falls that far. At 22, the Bulls could then look at a guy like Kevin Porter or even Bol Bol, as the potential bust would be far easier to take at 22, and especially as our second pick in 2019. Another guy I really like that would be available at 22, and I don't think gets enough gets brought up enough, is Naz Reid, who is a big guy. He shot the three well in college and is a decent passer. I think he could develop into a really good NBA rotational player. I know this is not a very Bulls-like move, but I wanted to hear your opinions on a trade like this. In my mind, if we're already taking a flyer on a guy at 7, I would prefer to take two long shots on lesser-known quantities. I feel like Ainge is such a good, so good at trading that we might have to add our second-round pick as well. But assuming we kept that pick and signed a veteran point guard in the offseason instead of drafting a first-round point guard, what do you think about adding Carson Edwards to play backup for the next few years? He seems like he should be there at 38, and he also seems like the exact type of guy the Bulls would draft.
All right, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. So, Matt, we didn't talk about the Celtics yet, but since kind of going off of our talk about the Spurs and trading back to maybe the mid-teens and maybe getting an asset or two, our caller brings up a very good point, and Kevin Pelton's value for each pick, he said, is equivalent to the 14th and the 22nd, says it's about almost equal. He brings up a handful of names, a couple guys that we've talked about and a couple guys we will talk about over the next couple of weeks. What do you think about this, though, in terms of what the Celtics would want to move up? Why would they want to move up out of their three picks to number 7? Is there something else on this Bulls team that would have to be included in order for the Bulls to actually have a real conversation with the Celtics about a trade? Like, the first person that I'm thinking of is Wendell Carter Jr. That's who I would think that they would want.
Yeah, especially considering, you know, Al Horford's getting, you know, he's not getting any younger, and Wendell is essentially a guy who everyone has made the Al Horford comp for what his ceiling might be. So the Celtics could essentially just pull a Spider-Man meme and be like, oh, here we go. We got a younger one of these guys. Cool. The one flaw I see in the logic of our caller's hypothetical draft night trade here, where the Celtics package 14 and 22 to move up to 7 to get the Bulls pick because Kyrie's a crazy person who's moving on, and it looks like Terry Rozier has worn out his welcome and vice versa with the Celtics. And then they would like to address that by adding Coby White or Darius Garland. Well, you and I were just talking earlier in this episode about how we think right now it's unlikely that either of them will be there. So the Celtics might have to trade up to above where the Bulls are at 7 if they want to swap two of their picks to move up into the top 10 to get their guy, and their guy is a point guard. That's the only part of this that I do not see as likely or realistic, because, you know, every team is calling every team and phones are going crazy as you get closer and closer to that first team being on the clock. So everybody knows everybody's business. And if it has become pretty apparent that Garland and Coby White are going to be gone by 7, then this Bulls-Celtics trade can't exist.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking too. And I mean, even if they don't want to address the point guard position, who's going to be there that really, really entices the Celtics
right
at 7?
Which is generally why all these people saying, well, maybe the Bulls should trade down. It sounds like the Bulls are open to trading down. Who wants to trade up to 7 in this draft? That's the part that I see as, like, not all that, you know, enticing for the teams that are not, you know, at 7.
Right, and that's the bad thing about being at 7 is you're in that gap now where guys that are taken from 7 to, I mean, you could even go back to 18 to 20. Like, anybody in that range could end up being a very good player, could be end up being a bust. They're all in the same tier at that point. So for the Celtics, it's like at 14 and 20, I think that they can take a gamble on a guy that would have somewhat of the same ceiling. I mean, unless one of those point guards drops, like we were talking about, Coby White or Darius Garland, which I don't think that that's going to be the case. So then at that point, like, for me, if I'm the Celtics, I would still really, really try to press for that Anthony Davis trade. Maybe they want to keep those picks around for that sake, and maybe they do get aggressive and they find out, you know what, an Anthony Davis trade is just not going to happen, so maybe we want to upgrade quicker than that. But I'm just thinking of their roster in general, and there's nothing that I can think of upgrading unless it's Carter. Like, that's the only piece on this team that I can really see the Celtics wanting is Carter, because, you know, he could play behind Al Horford, but he can also play the four, too. He can, you know, put him alongside Al Horford. They could do that, too, if in some scenarios, but I don't know. I don't see anything else on this Bulls team the Celtics would really be interested in. And the pick, I don't think, is very interesting for them either.
Yeah, that's the problem with this, is that when the talk about, well, what can the Bulls get if they float that seventh pick? It's like, well, what do they have that teams want? And is the seventh pick even that enticing itself? Because I think that the answer to both of those questions is not all that much.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So I want to touch on a couple of the prospects that he brought up, just because even if it doesn't work out with the Celtics, we did talk about a potential trade with the Spurs if they do really like Cam Reddish and he's there available at seven. You brought up Naz Reid from LSU, which, you know, I thought he was really good in the tournament. He was bouncing all over the place in terms of draft boards. But as far as looking at the draft boards now, I don't really see him anywhere. If I see him, he's somewhere in the second round. He's not even in the first round anymore. So he could be a potential pick in the second round. Kevin Porter Jr., we talked about quickly, and same thing with Nasir Little. I think Nasir Little has potential. I think he has great potential for the NBA. It's just about how hard he's going to want to work for it. And I do find it a bit bizarre that he compared himself to Kawhi Leonard, but we can talk about that. We can talk about that on a different episode, but I still think there is spots where
it's a bold comparison to make given what Kawhi has been doing in these playoffs.
Seriously. But I do think Nasir Little did show at times at UNC he can take over games and he can be dominant. So,
well, I mean, there was a reason he was projected as a top 10 pick not that long ago.
And this is the classic case, too, of the college game plays so differently than the NBA. And some of these guys don't play well and struggle in college in a system type of basketball. And this is something Nasir Little even talked about at the combine. He said that I think my game is more conducive to the NBA, and it's easier said than done, but to have a little bit more space for him to drive a bigger guy like that, as far as in college, you can clog the lane and basically stop him from doing any of that. I think the one weakness with his game is his jump shot, which, I mean, you can develop that, but the guy is an athletic monster. So, I mean, I would be intrigued at least a little bit if the Bulls move back to the mid-teens and you get a value pick like somebody like that. So, yeah, Kevin Porter, too, to me, man, that's just... The red flags to me just scare me away. And reading some of his comments too, I don't know. I just, it didn't sound like somebody who I want to buy or invest in.
Yeah, no, I'm not super high on that either.
The last guy, Carson Edwards.
Yeah, that I was going to say, that was the other name that was mentioned from this caller that I really liked. I am kind of a Purdue homer. My dad went there, so they've always been like one of the two Big Ten teams that I cheer for alongside Northwestern. Go Cats!
Who this man?
But I was really impressed with a lot of the things I saw from Carson Edwards, and I think that our caller hits on it in that he definitely seems like a Bulls kind of guy. In all of the most obvious ways.
I definitely agree with that.
He played really well.
He played pretty well in the tournament, too. The thing that I always circle back to... Yeah, the thing that I circle back to every time I talk about Carson Edwards is the gap that he had in the end of January, early February, where he shot god awful. He took the most field goal attempts in the NCAA this year, too, by the way, for Purdue. So I think he's really good, man, and I think he can shoot, and that's exactly what we need. I think he's going to have a tough time playing defense on a lot of NBA guards in this league, but, I mean, you're not talking about him being a starter. He'd be back up a rotation guard, but be a value pick in the second round if you can get him there. But I see him going maybe late first round if a team wants to take a chance on him or something before 38. So I think the Bulls are going to unfortunately miss out on him unless they move up a little bit.
Yeah. I think it's like, especially because of his performance in the tourney, 50-50 shot at best that he's there for the Bulls at 38. Especially when you think, you know, you're going to see these point guards just flying off the board in this year's draft. And yeah, as to his shooting, significant increases in field goal attempts and three-point attempts per game in his first, second, and third years. 9.6 field goal attempts, 4.1 of which were behind the three-point line as a freshman. 13.5 shots per game, and 6.5 of those were threes his second season. And then this season, 19.5 shots a game. There's that number you were talking about as far as leading in total shot attempts. 10.6 of those came from behind the three-point line this season. And with that big jump from 6.5 threes taken last year to 10.6 this year, his percentage dipped from 40.6 to 35.5. So you don't love that.
He's good nasty ball handling skills, and he's a good passer too, and he can shoot the three at a pretty decent clip. But yeah, I mean, when he goes cold, he goes cold. So that'd be the only thing to worry about with him. But I mean, would be a really, really solid get for the Bulls at 38 if he's still available too. And we'll talk about him, and we'll talk about Chimori Pons too from St. John's maybe in a week or so, just kind of dive into more of their games and when we start to dive into second round picks and who the Bulls could potentially get at 38. But yeah, Carson Edwards is definitely on our radar, and we'd definitely be happy with him in a second round pick scenario. But I have this bad feeling that he's not going to be available when the Bulls pick at 38.
Yeah, I kind of got a feeling that he's going to be gone as well. But if he is there, I mean, 3-year player from the Big Ten, it's got John Paxson written all over it.
It's true. Very, very true. Thank you for all the voicemails and all the text messages you guys have left us this week. That's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Thank you again to our sponsors, Hotels.com, Untuckit, and Grip 6 Belts. Grip 6 Belts is an easy and thoughtful gift for dads, brothers, husbands, uncles, grandpas, and even moms and wives. See their women's collection. Ultra lightweight with no holes, no flaps, and it carries a low profile with a buckle laying flat against your waist, making the belt super comfortable. Grip 6 is the only belt with no holes, no flaps, and no buckle. Grip 6 has a special offer for you if you go to grip6.com/lock. That's grip6.com/LOCKE for your special offer. Thank you again to Untuckit, Grip 6 Belts, and Hotels.com for sponsoring all our shows all week long. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Make sure you're subscribed to Locked On Bulls. That's Himalaya, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts, make sure you are subscribed to Locked On Bulls so you get our shows as soon as they drop. For Matt Peckham, Jordan Malley, Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
I've been talking to people walking here. We've been talking about next year, and I'm sitting there saying, I'm not going to be here.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com.